Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go on this Friday on the front porch, the 17th day of June, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. The third switch is thrown. I don't know who's trying to say throw the third switch. Third switch. Oh, wait, the third switch isn't thrown. I'll be dipped. Who knew? There, the third switch is thrown. So all you missed was the high part and the date. But we'll take that as read. Good thing you posted that throw the third switch meme in the chat room there, Trey. Yeah, that helped. That helped a lot. Otherwise, God knows how long I would have gone blathering on. But anyway, no, it is. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. And, well, latency. At least I hope that's what it is. Okay. Yeah, it was the latency of the interweb tubes. Yeah, what would this program be without a little beginning of the program drama now, huh? Huh? Really? Okay, great. Thank you very kindly. We are up and we are rolling. But at any rate, it is. It's Friday on the front porch, the 17th day of June, 2016. And, we'll be going to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in about 56 minutes and change. Yes, indeed. A couple of reminders, of course, if you'd like to join in the madcap merriment that is the zany 3-hour multimedia extravaganza in the Horn chat room. Just run on over to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be right there in amongst Anatole and Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Little Gray and Trey and more folks wandering along, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who is, of course, a third-stage guild navigator who has folded space to become Man Cave this evening, where it's 70 degrees in the Man Cave, I am told. Also joining us this evening, occasional, intermittent, longtime chat room moderator, Texas Betsy. Welcome, one and all. Truth Seeker just wandering into the room. Mm-hmm. So that's all set and ready to go. Of course, we will, like I said, at about 55 minutes and change, be going to the Horn Malloy Skype chat room for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, also including the stress line for those who cannot negotiate Skype. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, noting loud and clear on my TI-85, Brother Bob. Quite the collection Asa has, and my isn't Brother Deacon Asa out there on the forefront of cutting-edge technology. Mm-hmm. I'll bet that thing even plays Pong. Yes. Yeah, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, I am. Never mind the fact that it's that I have to do that because then, well, but I am, and I still am, and was yesterday, will be tomorrow. I was a little cranky toward the end of the night last night. I fasted from about 6 p.m. yesterday to about 8:30 a.m. this morning. Had to go and get blood work done, A1C, lipids, complete metabolic profile, complete blood count, all that fun stuff that you do every 3 or 4 months when you get to be, you know, when you get your geezer card. Yeah. So I went in, and I went in for my tri-monthly bloodletting, and get one test tube filled, get one leech free today, and extra prayers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big fun, because you can always get some big praying done down there. Rumor has it that, no, I can't say that. I can't say that because that would be an involuntary trigger of the, of the rule. Sorry, Gerald, but I get your meaning. Yes, you've had a sight. You've had a vision. This, of course, is listener-supported broadcasting. We closed down a little bit. The market closed down yesterday. No, the Horn fundraising closed down yesterday and overnight. Thank you to our subscribers. Overnight, we knocked off another $10. Remember, if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, we're still looking for our first 100. And you can subscribe over at headonradionetwork.com. Just click on the contribute tab, and when you put in $10 or whatever, just click make this a month, a recurring event or whatever it says there, and then you'll be a monthly subscriber. Monthly subscribers are very, very important in the process here because they often wind up making up for shortfalls in fundraising during the program. But as it stands, we've got $356.50 going back to Paul yesterday deciding to work in the cents part of the dollar and cents department. Thanks, Paul. $356.50 to raise. That's $156.50 remaining from yesterday and $200 for this evening to finish the week on the good because, bills are awaiting payment. And I don't ever want to have happen again what happened in May because that, was creepy and scary and sad and frightening and frustrating. So if you would like to help keep the program on the air, just run over to headonradionetwork.com, click the tab contribute, fill out the fields. You can leave the one blank about who you work for and where you do it. All of that. Don't even bother. You don't have to tell us what you do with Ed Norton down in the New York sewers. No. Just get to the next screen, and that's where, credit cards, and I don't think there's a button there for, put us in your will or anything, but no, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover, I think, and then, of course, PayPal. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, and many people do, you can mail checks and money orders to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay? And we recommend checks and money orders made payable to the Horn because remember, the little UPS store that has P.O. Box 318 in it also has P.O. Box 181 in it, which is rented to the Klan. Bastards. And so if you want to operate that way, just shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com or Facebook, send me a message, send me a tweet, whatever, letting me know. And I'll tell Boss Man Wayne, and he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, and he won't have to take anything with him but his trusty Louisville slugger in case he runs into a Klansman. Or in case a Klansman runs into his Louisville slugger. They do that sometimes, Klansmen. But it's 9 minutes past the hour. That takes care of all the fundraising stuff. And I am proud to say that we are now down to $346.50. Thank you very kindly to Lewis, who just kicked in to get Friday on the Front Porch fundraising started. last night, you may recall that in talking about the shooting of Member of Parliament Joe Cox, I said that it looked like the American disease had once again metastasized across the Atlantic onto ye olde sceptered isle. This England, right? Well, a little bit later, I had a conversation with our buddy, the Angry Indian, who pointed out that Tommy Mayer, the guy who is alleged to have murdered MP Joe Cox, well, that he had a passion for South African racist outfits. But that's South Africa, right? Once again, it turns out I was ahead of the curve. Not that I'm bragging or anything. I think I've just got a nose for this stuff. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, Tommy Mayer, age 52, Thomas Mayer, I think we can stop calling him Tommy. It's not nice to call assassins by nicknames now, is it? Thomas Mayer, who yelled, "Britain first!" right? Before killing the mother of two and supporter of Britain staying in the EU. Well, Thomas Mayer was described as, a loner, kept to himself, the usual. But upon doing a little digging around, it turns out, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, that he was a longtime and dedicated supporter of an outfit called the National Alliance. At one point in time, the National Alliance, according to the SPLC, was the premier neo-Nazi organization in the United States. In point of fact, in 1999, Thomas Mayer purchased a manual from the National Alliance, which at one point in time, the National Alliance was founded by a guy named William Pierce. People who follow the nasty business of Nazism and racism and the like will recognize his name as the author of the Turner Diaries. He is now dead, good, but he did not. But his legacy lingers on. You know, he was the inspiration for what Timothy McVeigh did to the Murrah Federal Building. Yeah, the Turner Diaries is a post-apocalyptic novel about a white man fighting a race war. Jesus. But he was the founder of the National Alliance. And over time, Thomas Mayer, sent a little more than $620 to the National Alliance to purchase stuff from National Vanguard Books. That's their little seedy, filthy, disgusting, racist, rotten, nasty, fascist printing press. One of the things that he bought, Thomas Mayer, was a series of works on chemistry of powder and explosives, incendiaries, and then a little something-something called the Improvised Munitions Handbook. Now, if one has a copy of the Improvised Munitions Handbook, one can thumb through to Section 3, Number 9, on page 125, where they give detailed instructions for constructing a .38 caliber pistol out of plumbing pipe. And a little bit of wood. Mm-hmm. And it may very well be that that is exactly what he used to murder Joe Cox in furtherance of his ultra-right-wing goals. Because later reports, once more information began to be gathered, was that Ms. Cox was killed with what could be called a homemade firearm. Like I said, the American disease spreads. Oh, thank you very kindly. Thomas over at FYINation.com says, loud and clear over here at FYI, after I figured out you weren't on. but I'm on. I am. I really am. So I thought that update was in order. Just take a moment to ponder that. The United States of Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, in the universe, ever, under God, amen, post no bills, has become, because of the First Amendment, a clearinghouse for teaching people in other countries how to murder their fellow countrymen. Now, lately I have mentioned issues with the First Amendment. This is not in any wise to say that I don't support free speech. I do. This program would not exist, could not exist in many countries, or if it existed, would exist for, you know, maybe one program before they put up, before somebody decided to put a bullet behind my ear. You know, and not with duct tape, but more like at 3,000 feet per second. But somehow or another, we have let concepts of free speech go off the rails. Because of free speech, the neo-Nazis published a book teaching people how to build homemade pistols. That was then purchased by a man in the UK and appears to have been used to murder a member of parliament, assassinate a member of parliament. Does it take on special relevance that she was female? Probably. Because right-wingers aren't exactly a bunch of women's rightsers. But I think we have to stop and consider the import of such a thing. How is it that in order for people to freely discuss, And by free speech, understand, free speech means the government not coming down on you for what you say. I mean, you know, if you, for instance, if you worked at, you know, Google, and you wanted to publish a manual that showed people in England how to build a homemade pistol, a homemade 38 caliber pistol out of easily obtained hardware, Google, if you worked for Google, Google could fire your ass. Google could, because it's not the government, Google could suppress that kind of information showing up on its searches. The other day, as noted, Pastor Stephen Stephen Microphallus of the what the hell ever who gives the damn Baptist Church in Arizona went off on a vicious tirade against the murder victims in Orlando. And YouTube said, you, Pastor Stephen, and your peace that passeth all understanding and your all-loving God, your words violate our policy against hate speech. And disappeared it. Now, I'm sure that this Sunday, Pastor Stephen Tiny Johnson will mount, oh dear, I don't even like the image of that, mount the podium, the altar, whatever, the lectern, and rail against, I don't know, YouTube, because they're stomping on his Christian rights, you know, to hate people and celebrate their murders. You know what? I think we're just going to change the name of this program to Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Sunshine. Nah, let's don't. But he'll deem himself persecuted. But the thing is, the government can't say. Now, consider the content of this program. I mean, you know, for instance, our buddy the Angry Indian works in the F-word like Michelangelo worked in stone. If this was a terrestrial broadcast, I would get fined about $475,000 every 15 seconds during a conversation with the Angry Indian because of a word that the government deems censorable on the public airwaves. That word is not okay. So the government suppresses that word. And of course, the word we're talking about is fuck. All right? On the other hand, under the guise of the First Amendment and political speech, the government will not suppress a manual that teaches people how to make homemade guns out of easily obtained stuff from the local hardware store. Ace is the place with the helpful handgun building hardware man. Well, I guess we'll never have an advertising contract with Ace Hardware now. You'll have that. But there's a question there. Thomas already did say assassinate. I didn't say assaniate. You wrote assaniate, not me. I did, because Thomas says, could you please say assassinate? She was a politician doing her job, and she was assassinated. No magic bullet, no Lee Harvey. Just a dick who built his own gun and wanted to assassinate a public official. Bingo, that's why I said. That's why I added the word assassinate. After murder, after slaughter, see also kill, see also destroy. Compare favorably with homicide. But you get the you get the idea. And since nobody else seems to be having much interest in discussing it, at some point in time, I would like for us to have a significant, attempted, meaningful conversation about where we are with the Bill of Rights. I mean, there's an enumerated right in the Bill of Rights that says you cannot be forced to quarter troops in your home. And, you know, in 1787, it probably made sense. Especially with a young country that couldn't even afford its own army and periodically went, had veterans at the boiling point because they were about to get stiffed. This was something that they had dealt with during the Revolution itself. And, yes, the British were notorious for forcing people to quarter troops in their homes. Oh, and by the way, during the American Civil War that amendment sort of went out the damn window. There were lots of troops quartered in lots of homes. God knows the Confederates did it, you know, the traitors. And the Union, well, but see, the argument can be made that in the South, the South had sort of forfeited the right to complain about the violation of their civil rights by, well, committing treason. I mean, after all, they said they weren't Americans anymore, so the Constitution didn't apply to them. So if William Tecumseh Sherman wanted to quarter troops in your home for a while and then burn it down, well, he kind of had the law on his side. Because you can't say, we're leaving the country, oh, but we want to take the constitutional rights with you. Uh-uh. No, doesn't work that way. But the larger point is that it, just like the Second Amendment is antiquated, and you know, militia being necessary to well-regulated, well, the Heller decision just kind of took a blue pencil and went right through that. And the Second Amendment now reads, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I mean, that's the upshot of the Heller decision. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. On the other hand, there's still wiggle room in there to regulate how one keeps and bears arms. Fourth Amendment? Oh, poor old Fourth Amendment. Poor little pitiful Fourth Amendment. Fourth Amendment's been dead for a long, long time. You know, it's a very simple statement of principle that that one shall be secure in one's person's papers and effects, and that a search warrant shall not issue except upon affidavit of probable cause. I'm paraphrasing. But there are so many exceptions to that now that the Fourth Amendment is more whole. If the Fourth Amendment was a Swiss cheese, it would be more whole than cheese. Oh, and hopefully you get my meaning. Well, the First Amendment, as I have said on a number of occasions, is nothing now save for a life support system for the religion industry. The First Amendment guarantees the right of newspapers to publish and broadcasters to broadcast, and, well, hell, I guess it even guarantees a certain amount of rights regarding this program. Yeah, yeah. But there's a long history with the First Amendment that says that that right is not absolute, that there's some stuff you can't do. And the one that they always haul out as an object lesson for the masses whenever somebody shows up on television as a pundit or an expert is that you cannot yet run into a crowded firehouse and yell movie. No, wait, no, the other way around. You can't run into a crowded movie house and yell fire. And there's a because much as a theater is sort of dark and everybody's crammed in and the aisles are kind of narrow, well, it creates a situation in which even if there is a fire, you're going to create more chaos and potentially more harm than if the attendees are, if there's an attempt to maintain an orderly evacuation of the premises. And so the question arises, how is it that the National Alliance, for instance, is allowed to exist and allowed not just to exist but to publish documents that wind up eventually providing the means for a 52-year-old man in England to assassinate a member of parliament. Because, see, that is a line that is bright red from point A to point B. Yes, he had a knife, too. But apparently the bullet did the dirty work, as the bullet so often does. How is it, how is it that that's allowed to continue? Note coming in from Betsy. Betsy says, as part of subject hate crimes, assassinations. As part of my intermittent attendance at the Horn, I was at Austin's Juvenile Detention Center last night speaking about hate. The moderator put up a pie chart of the hate crimes reported in the U.S., race, religion, sexual identity, etc. After the event, I took issue with the chart because it only showed 1% of the crimes relating specifically to gender. No way! How much domestic violence would occur, Betsy asks, if gender weren't an issue? Or rape? Well, see, that's what happens when you turn the thing around and look at it from a different angle. Betsy says, anyway, just another little ray of sunshine. All sunshine, all the time, here at the Horn. Meanwhile, a note coming from a member of the Trinity of Steve. Subject line, Science 101, Blood in the Streets. Steve asks, are we agreed that science per se is concerned with designing experiments that predict observable results? I think we can agree on that. Are we further agreed that science as rational method is not interested in prediction as one of its necessary axioms? Okay, I'll take that walk with you, Steve. I sincerely hope so, Steve says. Because if not, there are an incredible number of casinos scattered all over Nevada that are just dying to meet you and your wallet. A successful prediction is an outcome that happens to conform with the bias of the observer. You predict X, and lo and behold, X happens. If you're a good enough scientist. Yeah, that's the nature of a hypothesis, a prediction. But science is not necessarily concerned in a sort of absolutist way. If your hypothesis turns out to be wrong, science doesn't look at you and say, well, you failed, you can never do science again. Instead, science will try to analyze why it went wrong, what went sideways, what factors made the hypothesis not true. As Steve says, if you are a good enough scientist. Being a shitty scientist, on the other hand, X fails for having been designed badly enough that X is, in addition, not the case. Otherwise, gifted folk are forever laboring under the misconception that this, in addition, is somehow prefigured into the methodology of science itself. Nope, X just is. It need never tread water. X seems somehow to be an instance of idea and instance all at once. An example of natural paradox versus paradox of nature. But even a superb experiment doesn't become true for having been confirmed even 1,000 times over, or 1 billion or 1 zillion. It is never more than not disproved by its non-occurrence. At best, it is not the case that it is not the case. Oh, we're often some pretty thick weeds now. Sometimes enough people keep tripping and falling enough times over a period of perhaps millions of years that predictably they start calling the outcome a law. But it's the same old garden variety prediction anyway. It ain't got jack to do with science, even when it's rational. Not the case that not the case is nothing but the case. Period. No QED in these parts. What the fuck am I about here? Only this. Your logic is not a reflection of the world. Your logic is hard won, much like the scholar and his pons asinorum of geometers proofs. Oh, please don't take me back to geometry. Please, sweet Jesus, don't. For all the rest, you can blame Aristotle, perhaps St. Thomas, or Descartes, in the popular mind anyway. The philosopher got it right, got it so right on the score of syllogism, but he was an awful observer of nature. And that's not an accident. Modernism is the result of a systemic trial and error far surpassing the labor of common trial and error itself. And by that artificial term, I mean the frame of mind that comprehends the fundamental, the impossible, divide separating an archaic mentality from the scientific in general. Just like those card tables in Vegas, a systematic method, on average, leads generally to the same lost shirt. Systems are everywhere. And any idiot savant can count cards whether he wants to or not. These distinctions turn as much on personal experience as on the received wisdom of great figures or times. Not to understand this is to completely misapprehend the difference between mathematical demonstration and statistical probability. For example, they are not even remotely the same thing, while sharing a common and often suspect language. I find myself, Steve says, wishing that the conversation could rise to a similar and more inclusive level of awareness. It is so easy to spot the assholes and their asshole-generated opinion these days. One doesn't need to mention religion in order to see where I'm going here. The origins of America are founded in science rather than religion. Science is antidote to religion. The degree and quality of intelligence in evidence was, is a child of the former, not a devotee of the latter. Not even in passing or in jest. We are not exhilarated by the pace of change, as were our fathers and grandfathers. We are merely exhausted, though the pace of change is an illusion. We do not share in the benefits of the great strides made, only because we no longer share in the fruits of what is accomplished. We sweat mightily beneath the blazing sun of technology alone. I love this stuff. This is the kind of writing that I have to go back and reread sentences over. The politicians, the politics, well, what sort of honest man truly gives more than the occasional nod to any of that? A nation founded in rational action only comes to misery when it fails to act, rationally or otherwise. There's your goddamn epiphany. Put ketchup on it. Consider. There is roughly an equal number of years between the flight at Kitty Hawk and the advent of commercial jet travel, as between the technology that landed men on the moon and your latest version of Windows, or some configuration of smartphone. What's wrong with this fucking picture? You need not answer too quickly, or at all. Yeah, I love those time frame comparisons, because they will grow hair on your brain cells. The religious personality, its affliction is to forever justify the incomprehensible, to imbue or imbrue the passage of cosmic time via the predictive efficiency of a prophetic vision as with a natural outrage. The prophecy or the divine retribution are the one and the same, but neither understands the difference between a microscope and a telescope. One's supreme deity either confirms or defies a convenient fiction concerning the nature of life itself. We know, this late to press, that the only natural expression of nature is humankind. Just as people are never physical bodies in search of spirit, but rather natural spirit in pursuit of physical habits, if spirit makes you lay eggs, substitute mind or neuro-holological circuit, whatever jams your bread. Plato and Aristotle both got that much right in confidence, I'm sure. And for all that, so did the Declaration. Guns. See, isn't this is fascinating. Guns. The Second Amendment. Is there any more self-evident and easy-to-comprehend sentence in the Constitution? Considered in its historical and intentional context, what torturous and interminable provision of language itself can prevail against the abuse of argument as such? It is a mystery that there is no room for mystery, and that the life which constitutes the fabrication should turn on matters that seem mostly alien to the entire experience of American culture, necessity, and sensibility. When did we go so utterly off the rails of common sense, and why? The world does not frighten us so much, how could it, as we brute and bluster our way through the length and width of the barbarian wasteland, armed to the teeth, sharp of eyes, set for the kill? But really, we have unaccountably been led to believe the whole arrangement of useful existence has forever been this way. It is as though a people found themselves dispossessed of their wits at just such time as they found themselves in possession of, and at least obsessed with, the irreducible and monstrous specter of continuous warfare. Civil conflict, menace, slaughter, at every turn, routinely a feature of domestic happenstance. And the machinery itself, the instantly and blindly proffered device, as ubiquitous as jelly beans. This, says Steve, is no accident. The fix has been in for some time, but the minimum bet is now way beyond the means of the typical player. One is surviving, beating the odds, living in a war zone, when the color of authority presumes to execute the citizen rather than enforce the law. The questionable amendment has now become a death sentence. Something is terribly wrong here. Nothing could be closer to the truth than that another amendment be written to nullify this warrant of death. But to expect such a thing is impossible, since the simple and straightforward interpretation of the second itself is inexplicably beyond the capacities even of the Supreme Court, which, after all, is insanity. Since the American people have never been a gun-toting nation, never. That's an historical fact. Since the American people are not toting guns now, don't believe the bullshit. License has been given for any and every imaginable act of terrorism. We are victims of imagination, of disposable time and income. We are terrified. We are disposable. The fix is in real fucking deep. You are to believe, citizen, that all these learned representatives of justice, these makers and interpreters of law, of the laws of a nation founded on the rational application of law, are incapable of doing more, of being more, than a mob of robed apes, sitting on their fine feathered asses, all while the great empire burns to the ground? Then you, sir, are a horse's ass, and you deserve to get shot down in the streets in order to spare yourself further indignity. But here now, your children are blown to guts and gore in their own classrooms, and your learned political figurines weep and moan and cry their jaded tears, all of flutters and tassels through the vast hallways of the haunted palace, aghast, surely, their horrid masks bespeaking a tragedy they can scarcely lay hand to, much less interpret. And predictably, they now throw their hands high into the air, implore the gods, seek guidance, only to grow silent as the cold graves of those murdered children. Because, for no reason at all, the elusive content of some perfectly comprehensible old words baffles them, but only to the horrid crack of the next gunshot. For the words, you see, are the shot itself, while your salvation must be the next ricochet, whereupon the dance begins anew, with predictable results. To conclude, two numbers, if you will. 1963. 1968. Conspiracy is not conspiracy when it is up in your face all the time. Long ago, in that briefest space of time, so much as the pretense of what is possible in government, in people, was stopped. Stopped! Never to return. All the players, the card sharps, the carnival barkers, reformers, pragmatists, stargazers, pulpit pounders, technocrats, all know where the line in the sand is drawn. It is the line of a whizzing bullet into some part of the prey's body. It is a stark message and a quick cleanup after the slaughter. It has, truly, been over since then. We are, as the song has it, comfortably numb. It would seem to be the only medicine we are willing to stomach. Thus, we inhabit and become a sad and stupid time. To not understand why or how, that is to be nothing less than illiterate. Or perhaps no more than ill with literacy. Regards, Steve, in China. I'm going to be saving that and going back and studying it. Because if Steve is right, and you tell me, Steve, you're listening live, if Steve is right, then this really, we have really entered an era, and we have been in an era that is defined probably best by Shakespeare. A tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And all the, you know, after all of these horrors, we on our side, the side that likes to see, that presumes and holds out for public consumption the idea that we are in favor of 6-year-olds getting to be 7-year-olds, that we are in favor of 24-year-old gay men getting to eventually be old gay men. Well, we keep saying we've got to do something, we've got to do something. And we are opposed by a plurality, if not a majority, depending on how one frames the question, of people who aren't so sure about the price that they would be willing to pay to have those 6-year-olds become 7-year-olds, or those 24-year-old gay men live to be old gay men and women. Not sure at all. Because, see, I've got an example here. In the aftermath of the news from Orlando, it just so happened that the Southern Baptist Convention was having its annual meeting. And so they got right down to business with resolution number one. Now, if you're a delegate to the Southern Baptist Convention, you're not a delegate, you're called a messenger. And resolution one presented to the 2016 Southern Baptist Convention read, "Whereas our entire nation is grieving as a result of the mass shooting of over 100 people, resulting in the tragic deaths of at least 50 in Orlando, Florida on June 12, 2016, and whereas the Bible teaches that God has created all men and women in His image, and as the author of life regards acts of murder as evil and calls His people to love their neighbors as themselves, now therefore be it resolved that the messengers to the Southern Baptist Convention, meeting in St. Louis, Missouri, June 14th to 15th, 2016, pray for the surviving victims, all affected families of those murdered, injured, and otherwise harmed, and first responders, and be it further resolved that we extend our love and compassion to those devastated by this tragedy and pledge to come to their aid by donating blood and other supportive means, and be it finally resolved that we regard those affected by this tragedy as fellow image bearers of God and our neighbors, and therefore condemn this act of terrorism and others like it, and pray for the day when these senseless acts of violence cease." Okay. Anybody want to tell me what ain't in that resolution? Actually, there's several ain'ts in that resolution. Gay ain't in that resolution. Lesbian ain't in that resolution. Bisexual ain't in that resolution. Transgendered ain't in that resolution. Why? Because the Southern Baptist Convention does not view such people as to be fully human. Because, see, they're just image bearers of the God. Even if they're gay? But see, if you said that they were gay, you'd have to acknowledge that gay people can be image bearers of the God. Assuming, of course, that you believe in their great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky running around smiting people. Jack in Shreveport noting by email, resolution, I think I heard terrorism condemned, but not hate. Well, hell no, Jack, they can't condemn the hate because they practice the hate. This is pathetic. And see, that's that wasn't the end of their work. Because after they got done passing Resolution 1, they got to Resolution 2, and then here comes Resolution 3, sunshine! Whereas in the beginning God created male and female in his image as the crowning act of creation, whereas marriage is between one man and one woman, ordered by God toward the union of the spouses, the means of procreation, formative of family, and foundational to the common good of society, whereas we're going to ignore all those times in the Old Testament where kings of Judah and Israel had more wives and concubines than you can count in a day. No, that part's not in there. Whereas the Baptist faith and message asserts God alone is Lord of the conscience, and he has left it free from the doctrines and commandments of men which are contrary to his word or not contained in it, yada, 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 potty. Yada, 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 gay marriage. This is why we can't have nice things. You might be interested to know that when the Vatican said something about Orlando, they could only say innocent victims. The official voice of the Roman Catholic Church also could not bring itself to admit that the gay people murdered at the Pulse nightclub were children of their self-same God. Or, for that matter, admit that their self-same God created Omar Mateen, who did all the murdering, after all. See, that's where things like the devil and demons come in handy, because, well, I mean, you know, a loving God would never do that, right? It's stunning if you go through and you start looking to find out all, and you see all the different religions and civic groups and political groups who could not be bothered to note that the one thing which I think with almost 100% certainty can be said was definitional of the self of the people who were murdered, to find out that that one thing can't be mentioned, won't be mentioned. There's a professional sports franchise in Orlando. They play basketball. They're called the Orlando Magic. When they sent out their thoughts and prayers messages, once again, they forgot that the 49 dead people and the 53 wounded people to various degrees were gay. Even Chicken Noodle News, in the earliest phases of its reporting, couldn't quite bring itself to note that Pulse was a gay nightclub. Sky News, across the pond, had talking heads who insisted that it was improper to refer to the victims as LGBT people. I mean, this is an iteration of Black Lives Matter all over again. Because what did all the nasty people say when Black Lives Matter began to be an issue in circulation? No, all lives matter. And this has to be understood as a critical issue. Do you think for a moment that if Omar Mateen had gone in and mown down a Southern Baptist church full of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-metalist, ammosexuals, do you think that there would have been any problem in pointing out that they were good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, etc.? A wild-eyed Muslim man shouting, "Aloha, snack bar," shot up the Busted Knuckle Baptist Church today, filled with Christ-centered Baptists. It'd be in every story. It'd be in every expression of thoughts and prayers. But not if they're gay. And to a certain extent, remember, in the aftermath, because we're coming up on the anniversary, in the aftermath of the murders at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, all the white evangelicals said, "Woo, Jesus, they're a-coming after the Christians," and just conveniently forgot that every victim was black. "They're persecuting the Christians. Never mind what color they was. We don't see color. We only judge people by the content of their character, because that's the only thing we know of that Dr. King ever said." If you can't acknowledge that a murder was committed specifically because of who was being murdered, you kind of guarantee that it's going to happen again. And you sort of give the imprimatur of approval to whatever hate was put in play in the last one. Under the subject line, "Pray for the gay," Thomas says, "It would be really nice as a bisexual male that all these religious folks who are happy to pray me away would shut the fuck up and leave me the hell alone." Thoughts and prayers, Thomas. as to the Southern Baptist Convention resolution, Scott in San Diego, with Punky's approval, says, I detected several large dollops of legalistic religiosity, but not a molecule of humanity. Image bearers. God damn, they could swallow a mountain and choke on a gnat. So here we are at the end of the filibobster. They certainly do run away in a hurry, don't they? Thank you, Louie, for not only getting us started this evening, but for becoming a monthly subscriber. That is deeply appreciated. Thank you very much. We have $346.50 to go in fundraising this evening. About time to crank up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. And a reminder, if Skype is beyond you, then you can always use the stress line, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Got some other topics to go into this evening, depending on which way it goes in the chat group. If you've never participated in the Skype side of it, if you want to participate, all you have to do is on Skype, you know, you set up your account, and then you send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, and in the message area, say, Friday on the Front Porch, or Horn, or, you know, something that will let him know that you're not just some random spammer, because it happens on Skype, too. Brother, does it ever. And as we head toward the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, a little note, maybe mark it on your calendar for a few days hence. June 20th will be one of my favorite days of the year. It will be at one and the same time, West Virginia Day, the day in which we mark the anniversary of this poor, benighted part of the United States becoming a state that the rest of the country could then continue to ignore. And it will also be the summer solstice. And the summer solstice this year will be marked by a full moon. How nice. And not just any full moon. Now, while it's not pink, the full moon of June is often referred to as the strawberry moon. Because in many parts of North America, this is about the time of year when the strawberries start coming in. And in a time when we didn't get our strawberries sent on boats from the southern hemisphere in the dead of winter, and, you know, thereby contributing to God knows how much to global climate change, well, strawberries coming in was a big deal. That's what makes summer a big deal, regardless of one's hemisphere, because it's the time of growth and fruits and wonderful. I had my first watermelon of summer the other day, and oh my God, it was like candy. And because I'm a cantankerous individual, I thought, this tastes so good because it tastes so when. Things are treats when they're things that you can only have periodically. So come Monday evening, revel in the solstice and in the strawberry moon. This is The Horn. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, shall we? Thank you.
dinosaurs say. The finger moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. The finger moon, gonna get you all on the finger moon.
Song Pink Moon. 7 minutes past the hour on this, the 17th day of June 2016, Friday on the front porch on the horn. And let us not shilly shally about in the least, but instead run right over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
How you doing, Bob?
Good. You? Sounds like a nice day in the man cave.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's almost a little bit nippy. A little breeze going.
Okay, shut it, Sparky.
Well, it's quite overcast. You know, there's a bunch of fluffy clouds in the sky, but it's gray. It's a gray day. You can't even see Mount Lassen. It was supposed to get 2 to 5 inches of snow the other day.
Well, you know, it was kind of weird. After I started the broadcast this evening, I was out a little bit earlier, and it was lovely outside, pretty blue skies, great big puffy cotton ball clouds. And then I think for about 30 minutes during the first part of the program, just poured the rain. But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
So I'm enjoying it while I can. It's going to be 100 degrees on Tuesday.
Ew. Yeah, you won't be in the...
We can flip fairly quickly.
Yeah, without a doubt. And we'll soon be entering into what we refer to as our intolerable part of the year.
I officially became an old fart this week.
How so?
I got my Medicaid card in the mail. Medicare card, rather.
Oh, no, that's not being an old fart. That's winning.
Yeah, it doesn't go
Congratulations.
It doesn't go into effect till October when I actually turn 65. But I've been bombarded in the mail with supplemental information from insurance companies just every day, it seemed like.
And it will be that way for a while, I suspect. What about picking out your Part B coverage or your Part B provider and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. I've even got a phone call from Anthem Blue Shield already. Guy quoted me a price, and I said, "No, I'm going to shop around. I'm not going to accept that right now. I'm going to check all the options."
Oh, that's wise, and you know, even that presents another question, another facet of the debate. Why does Medicare, which was originally designed to be a universal single payer program, Why does it have to be complicated? Why does there have to be a Part B? Why isn't Medicare what it was designed to be? You know, full freaking coverage. You know, for everything healthcare related, or, you know, almost everything. granted, cosmetic procedures, things like that. Now, you go pay for that on your own. But
well, they do cut money out of your Social Security also.
Oh, sure they do, because they count Medicare as income.
Mm-hmm. I think a couple of years ago it was like $104 a month.
And the answer to my question is because we have to, or I guess we won't be MRCA anymore. We have to let the capitalists participate in the program.
Yeah, it's a hundred. It's like $104 for the premium for your Medicare, and then you have a small premium for your Part D for your medications. Also, you have your medication premium. So, whatever that might be for your Part D.
Well, you have to show a need to get Part D. I mean, it be low income.
Oh, really? Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
I got all the forms the other day from the government.
Oh, really? Okay.
For prescription assistance.
Part D is for prescription coverage.
Yeah, it's a...
Was that a George Bush thing, or where did that come from?
Yeah, that was the wildly unfunded Medicare Part D.
Got it.
AB is for health and hospital, so.
Well, that's what I got on my card.
Yeah.
Can everyone hear me?
Very distantly,
just barely,
Steve.
Is this better?
No.
Yeah, I'm driving home, so.
Ah, okay, well, you got better there for a moment.
Is that better?
You're going to have to yell. I mean, I can hear you. I don't know how well people who are hearing you who don't have headphones on.
Can people hear me now?
There you are.
There we go.
Okay. I just put the little microphone right up next to my face, and I apologize for the background noise. That's a function of driving on the Long Island Expressway back into the city.
Not a lot of background noise.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
Hi, y'all.
Hello.
Yeah, I should note, we've got a good group this evening. We've got Billable Rick.
Hello.
We've got Billable Rick and Jules and Scott in San Diego, Brother Usher Steve in New York, Trey in, I don't know where, Trey, and Texas Betsy.
Kentuckistan.
Oh, Kentuckistan, fun.
Hey,
neighbor.
How's everybody doing? It's Rick here.
What's happening, Rick?
Hi, Rick.
What's up, Rick? I'm eating a yellow flesh watermelon. Have you ever had that?
I grew up on them.
Delicious, yes.
I got like a whole half here that I just started to eat. It's like my afternoon snack. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so, yellow watermelon's fun.
Yummy. Yes,
yeah,
very good.
Got a bag of strawberries I'm going to throw in there. You know, so it's going to be very yummy. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you're all set for the strawberry moon on Monday.
Sounds delicious.
There you go. There you go.
I've actually been eating my way through a bag of... berries that somebody gave me.
Well, I walked around out in the back 40 earlier just to see how the blackberries were doing. I think we're going to have a bumper crop of probably blackberries and copperheads. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah, hopefully not the copperheads, but copperheads are notorious for hanging out in blackberry bushes.
Would that be blackberry as in blackberry cobbler?
That would be. As in canned blackberries, as in blackberry ice cream, as in, yes, blackberries.
Lots of stuff that Bob shouldn't be eating, probably.
Well, you know what? Exactly. That's why I crush up a metformin and snort it right off the desk.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, Bob. Hey, crew.
Hey.
Hey, Scott.
Everything is tickety-boo here in San Diego.
And so, I take it you survived the wild birthday hangover?
Oh, well, I didn't even have my vodka martini, which is a usual tradition. I'll just have maybe two tonight and just pour myself into bed. I wanted to, you jogged something in my, deep from within my memory banks, Bob, with your mention of Dr. William Pierce. of the ultra right wing white supremacist group. Do you want to delve into that? It'll take a couple of minutes.
Of Hillsboro, West Virginia.
Well, here's the deal. Did you ever see the movie? I think it came out in 2000. Denzel Washington was in it. It was called Remember the Titans.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Football movie?
Yeah. That was based on events that I witnessed in 1971, 1972 during my senior year at T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia. And it was a Hollywood version, but the story was essentially accurate. But the story behind the story and my close encounter with the American Nazi Party, or I think they were called the National Socialist White People's Party, which around that time William Pierce was the head of after the founder, George Lincoln Rockwell, was assassinated in the mid-60s. For my sociology class, well, no, let me back up. In the summer of 71, the Alexandria City School Board decided that to continue getting federal funding for the three major high schools, public high schools, they would have to desegregate. Now, you might say just outside of D.C. in 1971, it's rather odd that there's a segregation problem, but it was...
Not if it's Virginia, it's not.
Well, even Northern Virginia, which is considered a different state altogether. But basically, the layout of the land was on the east side of town, there was a predominantly black high school. On the west side of town, there was a predominantly white high school. And centrally located, more or less in the middle of town, was a school that was mixed. So what they decided to do to get racial balance was to make the east side and west side schools into 9th and 10th grade and make the centrally located school into 11th and 12th grade. And it worked. Actually, it did. It achieved the racial balance and preserved the federal funding. Now, unfortunately, there were more than a few students and parents who did not see the wisdom of this decision, and 31 Flavors of Hell was raised over the very notion of doing this, but it happened anyway. So I went to good old T.C. Williams High School that year. I took a sociology course, and I decided, given the stress and strain and consternation of the parents and the students and maybe even a few of the teachers, wouldn't it be interesting to bring a Nazi in to sociology class for show and tell to sort of get into their mind, get into the mind of a representative of the American Nazi Party. Now, you must remember that as a senior in high school, I still was carrying around quite a bit of naivety, okay? Thinking that, gee whiz, we can get in the head of a Nazi and find out why they are the way they are. And maybe get to the bottom of what makes them so hateful. Well, the school board nixed it in very short order. They said, no, we're not going to bring a Nazi in for show and tell. So I then implemented Plan B. Armed only with a tape recorder, an old reel-to-reel tape recorder from the school's audiovisual department, armed with only that and questions from the various classes that occurred during the day in sociology class, I trounced on over to the headquarters of the National Socialist White People's Party to interview a Nazi, and then we would play the tape in class as the next best thing. Well, they tell me, I think that tape still exists, and we're talking about events that happened well over 40 years ago, so I don't have a real clear memory of what was said or what the reaction of the students might have been. But it would be interesting as hell to call up the audiovisual department of T.C. Williams, if there is still one, and see if I can get a digital copy of that tape. But it was spooky as hell. This guy answered the door dressed up in full Nazi regalia with a sidearm, and my dad and younger brother went with me and I set up the tape recorder and did the interview, and it was quite an interesting thing. But at the time, or around that time, maybe slightly before or slightly after, Pierce was the head of that group. And when you mentioned his name, I said, ah, now there's a name from the past.
So, did you actually meet him, Scott, or not?
No, I didn't meet Pierce, but I met his main assistant, who you can probably Google and get information about. I think he's dead now. His name was Matt Kahle, K-O-H-E-L, and he had a little mustache, but it wasn't quite the Hitler mustache. It was kind of a little wider. It was more who was that guy who was in the Thin Man movies with Myrna Loy? William Powell. It was more of a William Powell sort of mustache.
Okay.
But he was just as hateful as George Lincoln Rockwell was, and certainly just as hateful as Dr. William Pierce was. But when you mentioned his name, I said, my God, I hadn't thought about that for years, and maybe it would be interesting for Bob and the crew to hear the story. But the good thing that came out of the desegregation plan of the three major public high schools in 71, 72 was that the school pulled together, and as was depicted in the film Remember the Titans, we went on to become the state champions that year, because you had football players from the white school and the black school and the middle, you know, racially balanced school. And under the tutelage and instruction of Herman Boone, who on his best day, Coach Boone, did look nothing like Denzel Washington. I mean, Denzel Washington would have to be knocking at death's door and hung over to boot to even come close to looking like Coach Boone did in actual life. But it's Hollywood. You know, they do what they've got to do. Get those asses in the seats. So, anyway, that's my little brush with greatness or madness, whichever you prefer.
Scott, what did your fellow students think about your interview with the Nazis?
Well, the ones that I actually witnessed myself, that when we actually played the interview, the ones who were in my class, we had a couple of Jewish kids who were not too happy with the idea, but the teacher was kind of on my side, good old Mrs. Gibson, and she said, this is part of education. If we're talking about sociology, if we're talking about human behavior and what goes on in the minds and hearts of people and how it plays out in society, it's good to know as much about as many kinds of people as we possibly can. So they kind of were okay with it, but initially there was some resistance.
That was actually very brave of you to go in there to the den of the, you know,
into the lion's den.
The lion's den, or the devil's pit, or whatever you want to call it, the snake pit, I guess you could call it.
But you got to remember, at the time I was a senior in high school, and I hadn't gotten my full education as a human being, skillfully trained in the ways of the world. And, you know, when you're young, you're immortal. You know,
right.
Back in those days, the motto was never trust anyone over 30. Okay. And hell, I just turned 62 yesterday. Back then, if you had told me I'd be sitting here now talking to you on a computer to the rest of the world over something called the internet, and I'd be sitting here at age 62 doing that, hell, age 30 was remarkably old. So twice that now, plus some besides, it was inconceivable. But, you know, if you're young and naive and not sure which end is up, you tend to do a lot of stupid things, you know, which that was. I guess there was some bravery. But I'm telling you, I was an optimist of the highest magnitude back then. And I thought, well, if we just learn what makes them tick, maybe it'll change things. Well, no, that ain't exactly so.
Yeah, well, you can, you know, you were thinking, well, maybe I can convince them to change their opinion about things, right?
Well, even to get a sense of how they got to be that way, because when this desegregation plan was first announced, they drove their VW microbus, the Nazis did, over from Arlington, which is right next door to Alexandria, and got a permit to hold a rally. Well, a lot of us, black, white, and mixed, went down there to hoot at them and to laugh and deride them, okay?
Well, it's interesting you had mentioned the hooting and the deriding, Scott, because I just had a note from Earther in the chat room saying, no Nazis for show and tell? How are you going to practice your raw egg throwing for home ec?
Exactly, exactly, breaking those eggs. But maybe the guy knew that it was an exercise in futility from his end because he wasn't going to change any minds no matter what he said. So he had more on the ball maybe than I did. But he, as I recall, he spouted the usual line and sanctified the late George Lincoln Rockwell, who founded the organization. And it was an interesting chapter. And I'm sure that there's, you know, given COINTELPRO and some of the government surveillance things that were going on back in those days, I'm sure that somewhere in a file deep in the bowels of the NSA or the CIA or the FBI, I'm sure there's filmed footage of the three of us armed with the tape recorder and questions from students traipsing into the building. You know, it might be interesting to check out the through the Freedom of Information Act to find out what they might have on me. Because, see, at the same time, around that same era, maybe a year or so before, I was going to these massive anti-Vietnam War protests and was on all manner of mailing lists. And then later on in the 70s, through the Church Committee and Congressman Pike's committee on the CIA and intelligence activities, there was mail interception, there was infiltration of all these groups, okay? So who knows what type of file there is? I mean, at least I'd like to think so, that I was enough of a little 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old rabble-rouser that I came to somebody's attention, or they, you know, I might have been small change in their estimation.
You probably do have an FBI file, is my guess. I wouldn't be surprised at all. When you went and interviewed the Nazi, how much exposure had you had at that age to, let's say, people of color? Did you have like friends who were, you know, black friends or, you know, other races, well, that type of thing, or not?
Well, the year before, my junior year in high school, I went to George Washington High School, which was the school on the east side of town, which was predominantly black. I'd say maybe 70%. Okay. So, and I got to, you know, be friends with quite a number of people of color and people different from me, because for the 10 years prior to that, I'd gone to Catholic schools, first through eighth grade, and then my first 2 years of high school. And those were essentially lily white and homogenized and, you know, very, you didn't get a sense of the real world, not just because of the theology, but because of the mix of people that you encountered, both teachers and students.
Okay, that's interesting. Did you ever think about writing an article for the school paper about this or anything like that, or you ever get involved in the school paper?
My junior year I did at George Washington High, but not my senior year. My senior year, we had a kind of a mock radio station that went into the cafeteria, and we would play pop music, and each staff member had like a one-hour shift, whatever the daily class periods were. And I had the morning period, so I would go in and do my radio thing. So I was more into that than like yearbook or newspaper, that kind of thing.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I was actually on the school newspaper staff, and I ended up going to some sporting events. I remember, I think I maybe talked to or interviewed some of the Harlem Globetrotters when they came to town, and then there was a exhibition tennis match between Rod Laver and Venus Gerulaitis, And I think I was able to, you know, ask some questions of Rod Laver. So that was pretty interesting, you know. And I had a tape recorder and everything, a very primitive one, of course. It's not easy at that age to go and, you know, interview people, but it's good experience for sure, you know?
Yeah. Well, another brush with white supremacist madness that I had in 1995, at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing at the Murrah Building, I was living in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and President Clinton at the time went to Oklahoma City and gave a speech and decried the madness. And so I wrote a letter to the editor basically describing the notion of they're taking our guns away. I did a similar version of it the other day when I called in to Bob's show, basically using a calculator, figuring X number of guns, X number being rounded up per hour, times 24, times 365. Back then it was only 200 million guns. Now there's like 300 million. And even at 10,000, 1,000 an hour, okay, 24 hours or whatever, it would take 35 years, basically, to round up all the guns. And that assumes that there's someone to do that. Okay, that there's a plan to do it, also that the gun owners are not shooting, and also that you can find a place to park. So I put all of that in a letter to the editor that they published. Hmm. Well, about 2 days later, and this was in two newspapers, the local Tulsa paper and also a paper that had statewide Oklahoma circulation. Well, like 2 days after these letters appeared, I walked out to get the mail one morning from the house I was living in, and there was a large manila envelope propped up against one of the posts of the front porch. And I said, well, this is interesting. And my name was written on it, because you have to put your name when you sign the letter to the editor. And I opened it, and it was from a white supremacist organization called WAR, White Aryan Resistance. And apparently they took exception to my making fun of their fear that there was a plot to take away the guns. Now, and there was some other literature beside, but the main thing was their newspaper that came out once a month with all manner of hateful, racist, anti-Semitic cartoons and articles and stuff. Now, mind you, it kind of shook me up once I got to thinking about it, not so much their propaganda, but the notion that that could just as easily have been a bomb or a Molotov cocktail delivered to me for my views and opinions. And it really did freak me out. So I called my younger brother, who at the time was in the Secret Service, and told him what had happened. And he said, let me talk to a couple of friends in the FBI and in the Secret Service. And he did. And then he called me back and he said, basically, they're probably harmless in the sense of doing you any harm. They were just sending you a message. And the dynamic that he said that his associates told him was that they generally can't get their letters to the editor published. So it incenses them when they see one that's published that derides their thought processes, you know. So,
which is actually logical and, you know, intelligent and rational, you know, as opposed to their crazy theories, you know.
Yeah. So, apparently, it held no weight with them that I actually, through the magic of recording tape, took a Nazi to show and tell 20 some years earlier. That held no weight. They were just not happy that I thought it was silly that they thought that people were going to take their guns away.
Yeah, well, you know, another thing you have to consider in doing that calculation is of the government's going to steal your guns is that calculation has to factor in the number of additional guns that are purchased during the time of the takeaway.
Oh, yeah, and every time there's an incident, a shooting incident, they ramp up the rhetoric that they are coming to take our guns, and gun sales go up. So it's a never-ending dynamic.
Oh, you know, I sometimes wonder if, I mean, you know, talk about like, you know, like a false flag operation. I sometimes wonder if the NRA doesn't stage some of these mass shootings. I mean, it would be to their economic benefit.
Just an FYI, the Guardian had an article day before yesterday about the Smith & Wesson had a 50% uprise in their gun sales.
Oh, everybody, all the gun manufacturers go up after a mass shooting.
Oh, no, over the course of the last year, they had a 50% increase of gun sales last year.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, in the immediate aftermath of a mass murder, gun sales go up,
and that
gives us a pretty good idea of how sick this country is.
It is. It's horribly insane that we would have people going out and purchasing more guns because they think that they're going to have the rights taken away. No one's going to go out and try to take their guns away, for Christ's sakes. What insanity, what kind of perversion do people have that they think our government's going to go out and start taking their guns from them? I mean, in the first place, it's
I favor a buyback. I favor banning the sale of these goddamn things, banning the sale of them at gun shows, banning the sale of them as collector's item, replicas, what have you. And once you've banned the sale, you put forward you remember what was it? What was the automobile associated the clunkers or what? Cash for clunkers or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I firmly support the idea of offering money to people who own these damn things and offer them money at better than fair market value. Put you know, make it worth people's while to sell the damn things to them, and then screw the NRA, then destroy them, melt them down in a furnace.
Do a gun buying back. That's great. I mean, I agree with that 100%.
But you know what? The NRA, and I'm not really being snarky in this. The NRA may be in trouble now because. It may turn out that they've tangled with the wrong people. Among other things, the Human Rights Campaign, now that there has been a mass murder at a gay nightclub, the Human Rights Campaign has announced that they're going to start pushing for firearm restrictions, tighter firearm restrictions. Which means that they're going to go head to head. You know, basically, they're going to the mattresses against the NRA. And good on them. I feel a little bit about that. About it like the end of Casablanca. You know, for old movie buffs and remember Rick Blaine, Humphrey Bogart throughout the movie says, "I stick my neck out for nobody." That's my bad Bogart impression. and you know, he's strictly in it for himself. Well, you know, that's kind of how the Human Rights Campaign has been. But at the end, after he's killed the Nazi colonel and sent Ingrid Bergman on the plane with Victor Laszlo, Ilza, with Victor characters, Louis talks to him about paying him back that money he owes him. And Rick says, just about ought to cover our expenses to Brazzaville, or I hear there's a free French garrison in Brazzaville. You know, just about ought to. And then Louis says, no, it's not Louis. It's Victor Laszlo who says, welcome to the fight. This time I know our side will win. So, you know, to the Human Rights Campaign, I say, welcome to the fight. Well, maybe this time we'll win.
I will say this. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah, I got you, Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like the HRC, as you do about the big greens, and this kind of surprises me a little bit, which tells me their big money backers might have actually said it's time for you to do something. Because typically the Human Rights Campaign is a group that kind of, you know, goes to cocktail parties and talks to the glitterati in Washington just so they can look good and companies give them lots of money so they can get rated, so they can rate them as gay friendly. Typically the Human Rights Campaign is among the, it really is a primarily a inside the beltway type of organization. So like you said, if that's really what, if this is what takes them to actually get involved in something substantive, you know, don't mess with the queers. We're here, we're queer, right?
Well, exactly. And I mean, they have been effective in many of their campaigns. Maybe they're the ones that finally breaks the NRA's back.
Well, yeah,
and you know what? I'll go this far because I know it's rather a profound debate. Tell me if I'm wrong, Steve, inside the gay community, because you know, just like Tracy has to speak for the black population, you have to speak for gay people everywhere.
But the
question of outing people is I understand it, a deep moral and ethical debate, especially inside the gay community.
There's a subset of that debate, and the subset of that debate centers, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Angels in America, but or if you know who Roy Cohn was a really hateful right winger.
Yeah, he was an accomplice to
I mean, he worked for
Joe McCarthy.
Jesse Helms. Yes, Jesse Helms and all these people. I think he kind of started that. And I think Larry Kramer was one of the ones who got this outing people thing going. Outing people who are benign is not so much the issue. If you take people who are actively working to hurt LGBT people.
Yeah, but what? And that's precisely my point. What if, among other things, by leveraging the gay community to get into the struggle against our firearms pandemic? What if maybe a few NRA types start getting outed?
Oh, ain't no Bob. Few is not the word. I tell you what. When I worked up there. It was like, I don't know if I ever told you, I worked on the Hill for a year. It was a silly joke that people knew a lot of the, the class of 94, a lot of the chiefs of staff who worked for them were queers $3 bills, and everyone knew it. And when someone finally, and there was actually a movie about this called, I think it was called Out Front, about somebody who took to doing this, and when that started happening, you know, that's when it when people
and that's what I'm saying. You know, maybe we'll out a few notorious NRA cash recipients in Congress will get outed,
or people in the NRA.
Oh yeah, would I love to find out, and B, would I be at all surprised to find out that Wayne LaPierre does some toe dancing in the men's room of in the basement of the Minneapolis airport? Not at all.
Here's something
positive to keep in mind in terms of a possible precedent in terms of fast tracking common sense, rational gun laws in America. When you look at how quickly the Proposition 8 case here in California basically was able to be resolved in such a way that something like 2.5-3 years later, gay marriage became de facto and legal, marriage equality in all 50 states. And the thing that they used to do, and it was brilliant, using Ted Olson and I forget the Democratic lawyer involved, Ted Olson and
David Boies.
Basically, the anti-gay marriage, the anti-marriage equality people could not bring a rational, believable, not stupid argument to stand in the way of marriage equality. And maybe this could be some sort of a tipping point, the events of Orlando, that people will finally see that something of a basic common sense agreed upon nature. I mean, 70 to 90% of people agree that eliminating the straw man purchases of guns and eliminating the gun show loophole is a worthwhile enterprise to keep these kinds of weapons out of the hands of lunatics, terrorists, and criminals, that the time has long passed to do it.
Or even just ban them. Forget about keeping them out of the hands of those people. Just ban them.
Yeah, well, yeah.
What the hell does an AR-15 need to be on sale for? Like Bob has said over the last couple nights.
I get that.
If you're hunting with an AR-15, well.
You're also going to be eating minced meat if you're hunting with an AR-15.
I'm sorry, this is very true.
No, my point is basically that this could be another version of the marriage equality fight, and that thing took off like a herd of birds once people saw the stupidity of the forces opposing it. Okay? And common sense agreed upon gun laws that could help rather than hurt things could also go that quickly, based on these events and people's reaction to it, because people have had enough of it.
Right. Can I make an observation? And this is, and maybe I just haven't seen it, but this is something that really has struck me about the incidents on Orlando. In every single, I hate being able to say every other mass killing, the NRA has basically come out and said this wouldn't have happened if only those people would have been armed. And I haven't seen it, but I haven't seen anybody say, well, this wouldn't have happened if only all those 49 people hadn't been packing heat. And it seemed, and it's exactly what Scott's saying, is maybe, just maybe, that doesn't look plausible or rational even to the crazies at this point. And I, again, maybe I just haven't seen it.
Well, I mean,
I thought
about the same thing, Steve, and I thought about it in conjunction with thinking about that clip that I played from Geraldo Rivera the other night, in which he said, you know, come on, people, you've got to rush the shooter. And I thought implicit in that was a challenge to of the courage of gay people. And so, you know, maybe I wondered if the NRA said, well, you know, that'd just be silly to say that a bunch of gay people ought to have guns. I mean, you know, come on. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of
that.
They're a bunch of pansies anyway, and they wouldn't have done it.
Right. There's an implicit slur.
But now I see what you're saying, but. I don't know. Maybe that's right. Maybe we'll have to see what happens at the next mess.
Well, I mean, as of last night, because I shared their editorial from Chris Cox. You know, the president doesn't need to take good people's guns away. We need to fight terrorism better. I mean, but you're right. They didn't even make the good guy with a gun argument. Because I think that has been so thoroughly debunked, or actually it's been rebunked. It's been shown to be nothing but bunk.
But it doesn't meet the smell test. It's one of those things where you know, even you only have to be somewhat reasonable to think, wait a second, more guns equals less violence. It's like saying if I only eat more fat, I'll lose more weight.
But.
If I could jump in here, I'm almost
Rump. Hey, Rick, hold on a minute. I just saw a note. Texas Betsy has to boogie in a second, and she's got an entirely separate topic she wants to address.
Well, thank you. I'm going to address this one real quick first, which is there were guns in the room, and people did fight back, and that's why it's 50 dead and not 200 dead.
Are you talking about the cop who shot back?
Yes.
Yeah, he was basically outgunned. There were
trained professionals in the room with guns, and there are still 50 dead.
Yeah, the problem is, the suspect had, the killer had an AR-15, and
No, he didn't.
What?
He had a Sig Sauer.
Oh, Sig Sauer. Okay.
Here's something worth
remembering. Wait. We're going to wander off into the weeds because Betsy has a different topic. One quick note. That Sig Sauer has a foldable stock for anybody wondering how he got a gun in there. So it tucks away very nicely, which was probably a selling point. But go ahead, Betsy.
So I actually wanted to talk about refugee stuff for a second. I've called in before. Texas is one of the states that... Oh, just for people who don't know it, I work with refugees for a living. Education, middle school, whatever. But I'm also now on the advisory council for Refugee Services of Texas. And we got notice this morning, I guess last night, but I got it this morning, that Texas had rejected the idea of bringing in Syrian refugees. And it's been sort of a big deal in my community because Caritas, which is our local refugee resettlement agency, refused to take refugees because they can't afford getting defunded. And the Dallas refugee resettlement agency did take Syrian refugees because they're part of Catholic Charities. And Pope Francis wanted to pick a fight with the state of Texas if the state of Texas was willing to, catch the bait or whatever the expression is. So a federal judge yesterday decided that Texas is not, the governor is not allowed to exclude Syrian refugees. That we have 6 refugee resettlement agencies in Texas, and that whatever the federal government wants to send us, that's who we settle.
That's great.
Well, I mean, that was a foregone conclusion all along because Texas does not have the right to set to usurp immigration policy. That's something over which the federal government maintains exclusive control.
But given our funding issues, that's not something that Austin was in a position to really object to. We had to let it play out in court.
Looks like the Pope does have an army.
Yeah. The Pope basically said, fuck you.
I couldn't resist, by the way.
Right. You want to pick a fight, I'll fight right back, and I'll win.
Well, he's got Swiss guards who guard him, right? He does have an army.
He does have an army. He did not set up. But
just infantry is all, though.
Right. Anyway, it's been an interesting experience, and I know it's a foregone conclusion, but I've also seen our Supreme Courts of late do things that do not jive with foregone conclusion, like Citizens United.
Yeah. Hey, Betsy, was that a district judge who made that decision? Just a single judge at the lowest level? Trial court level? Because that'll probably get appealed to the Fifth Circuit, which is very conservative. They upheld those abortion restrictions that Texas put in place. And now that's up in front of the Supreme Court.
United States District Judge David Godbee.
Okay, yeah, you can bet Texas is going to appeal that. And they're going to hope for a conservative panel of the Fifth Circuit and, make it a big deal like they did the abortion restrictions, And the same thing, they did the same thing with regard to the, to Obama's deferral, I guess, immigration the path to, I guess, the deportation policy, the new deportation program that Obama wanted to start, allow the parents to stay in the U.S.
But you know what? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
To our eternal shame, Texas has the most immigrant detention centers in the country.
Mm. Jeez.
You know, and Rick, I think that this is one of those things where, look, the Constitution, whatever you think about the right to privacy and as Mike Malloy calls it, rather than just choice, the Constitution is pretty damn locked, stock, crystal, whatever the word is, crystal clear on immigration stuff. And the term plenary power, I remember studying immigration in school. Plenary power was the two words attributable to immigration. And so far as them stopping Obama's policy, the issue was, as I remember, whether or not he had the authority vis-a-vis Congress. But
right.
the issue here is whether or not the state can step in and have anything to say about immigration policy. And I can't even see the Fifth Circuit overturning that. On the other hand, like Betsy just said, there's an awful lot of foregone conclusions that go the other way.
Right. Yeah, precisely. I mean, I hope that you know, the Fifth Circuit, if it does consider it, says, look, forget it, get out of here. The feds have exclusive authority over matters involving, immigration of refugees and, tough cookies, Texas, you lose,
Right. The only place where we have anything to say to the federal government, and this is also happening in Houston, but not in Austin, is we, unless you build more, federal housing units, we cannot accept any more refugees. Just, Austin actually is running out of places to put people.
Wow.
How
many refugees are being housed in Texas, Betsy, that, are awaiting deportation hearings or what have you?
Refugees are not facing deportation hearings.
They're not, okay. Or refugee centers, I guess. I guess that's a different situation, yeah.
Give me 2 minutes, talk about something else, and I'll pull it up. Actually, it's coming,
That's fine. Let me just mention that T-Rump, after the shootings, I think he did say that more guns are the answer to prevent tragedies like that in Orlando, the shooting in Orlando. I'm pretty sure he did, and he took a lot of heat for that.
Right. But and like Bob and I were saying, what I think the thing that struck both of us was that you didn't hear it coming from the NRA. You didn't see Wayne the Peter, as Mike Malloy calls him. You didn't see Wayne the Peter out there saying, "Oh well, if only all those queers have been packing heat."
Well, you know what those guys tend to do after mass shootings is they tend to kind of stay back. At least Wayne LaPeter stays back and enjoys his blood martini and revels in the latest mass shooting because he knows the sales of firearms are going to go through the roof. So they sort of just kind of lay off for maybe a week or a few days or a week, and then they get into it a lot of times. At least that's what I've noticed.
Hey, can I ask Betsy a question?
Yeah.
Are you Shomer Shabbos?
I am not.
Oh, okay. I thought that maybe you were getting ready to leave because you were going for Shabbos.
I'm actually invited to a Shabbat dinner.
Oh, okay.
So I could talk about Austin and I could talk about the United States, but I can't talk about Texas. In the United States has admitted over 50,000 refugees in 2014. In 2015, Caritas of Austin resettled 593 refugees, and Refugee Services resettled 208. Currently, that includes 190 children. Of that 190 children, if you add 2015 to every other year, there are currently 982 enrolled in my school district, 182 refugees.
Okay. That's good to know. Texas probably has...
We have a lot.
A lot, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it stands to reason that the U.S. should take in refugees because our foreign policy creates refugee problems. You know? And we expect Europe to basically shoulder most of the burden, you know?
But there's very little funding. There's there's the initial settlement funding, and then after that, there's almost nothing.
Mm. Does that last for like a year or two to get them back on their feet, or how long does the aid last?
Monetary aid is 4 to 6 months, and then employment aid can go up to 3 years.
Okay. It's not very long.
It's not long at all, especially for families that are coming in with no education.
Yeah.
Of which we have some.
Or who don't speak English.
Yeah, they first have to learn English.
Different issues.
Yeah. So are you an ESL teacher, as I recall, aren't you? Don't you do some of that?
Yes. The classes that I developed and started teaching this past year are ESL math, but math for kids who are learning kindergarten, first and second grade concepts in sixth, seventh, or eighth grade. Either they never went to school before, or their schooling was really inadequate, or their schooling was a long time ago.
Okay,
I hate to break in, but we are 2 hours into the program, and this is kind of a necessity. I want to first offer thanks to Rico in Pittsburgh, who jumped in with some help. We are now $326.50 away from finishing the week okay. I will simply say that we do not need to begin Moran Monday in a $526.50 hole. Okay? We really need to knock down what we had. We finished in a hole last night. We had $200 to raise today. And so we're $326.50 in the hole. I'm sorry to interrupt the flow of conversation that way, but with 1 hour to go in the program, it becomes rather of a necessity. Sorry.
Okay.
It is your show after all, Bob.
No, on Fridays it's ours. And for that matter, it's always ours. This isn't my network. This is our community. Betsy, I got a question, and I don't know if you can update or not, but Marty emailed a little bit ago and said, you know, it's been eons since we've heard anything about Cassie. And, you know, this community has a deep interest in how she's doing, because she's kind of like, you know, she started out sort of as the horn mascot kid, and now she's the horn wildly succeeding at law school kid. Any update?
Well, she's the horn taking a break from law school kid.
After what, the second year?
Yeah. She actually went out on a leave of absence type deal with 2 months left in the semester.
She okay?
I saw her in April.
Okay. Well, just checking in.
Yeah. She's not having an easy time of things right now.
Doesn't sound like. When you talk to her, wish her well for us.
I will. I will indeed.
By the way, your Shabbos remark earlier, Steve, elicited the following from Brother Deacon Asa. Sounds like we got a big Lebowski fan in the house.
Well, no, I just know what it means, and if she was going, I thought that.
Oh, come on! You are a big Lebowski fan now.
Oh,
don't.
I am a big Lebowski. Oh, you. That's no. If I would have been playing my Lebowski, I would have asked if she would show her fucking Shabbos.
Right. Because I'm a big Lebowski, I'm a big Lebowski fan, and the first thing that occurred to me when you said that was, I don't roll on Shabbos.
Yeah, I didn't know if the sun's going down. I thought she was, and I just was going to I wish her a Shabbat Shalom if she was.
Well, you can feel free to wish me Shabbat Shalom, but the sun doesn't go down for an hour and 15 minutes here.
Well, Shabbat Shalom.
And so here as we approach the solstice, is it blazing in Austin?
It is so unbelievably hot. It's like...
But you're so unbelievably solar powered, right?
My house is. No, it's not actually how hot it is. It's the fact that it's still humid. And the heat is here and the humidity forgot to go away.
And in many ways you can say of Texas what our buddy Burns said of Alabama in his song Alabama Jesus that I played for the first time in eons this past Wednesday, to tremendous acclaim, I might add, if you're listening, Burns. It's not the heat. It's the stupidity.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
A line that I absolutely adore.
Yeah. Anyway, I just, having good news, which I so rarely do, I thought I would share it with you guys.
Well, yeah, it's kind of nice when the federal judiciary will do its job, and so often is the case, the job of the federal judiciary in the state of Texas is to flip a rousing middle finger toward the state house of Texas.
Yep. Our state
house. Let's hope the Fifth Circuit upholds it.
Yeah, our state house. Right now, the governor's office is as bad, if not worse, than the Capitol. The legislature hasn't met.
Well, you've got your legislature only meets every 2 years, but you got a real winner of a lieutenant governor there. I mean, since we're hauling out the special words, it takes some real chutzpah to tweet out "God is not mocked" after 49 people get murdered.
Oh, Bob, but that was scheduled the previous Thursday, don't you know?
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, that just they've just got a random Bible verse tweeting tweet bot there in the lieutenant governor's office.
I'm sure they do.
Oddly enough, I have yet to see the verse tweeted about, you know, Lot's daughters.
Well, they're a little selective.
Okay, so we're now down to $301.50, courtesy of Mike in Cascadia. Mike says, mowing the desiccated lawn in Northwest Washington. Usually Northwest Washington lawns are lush, green, and damp until late July. Doing my part to not contribute to climate change by mowing with a simple non-motorized push mower. We'll go to PayPal in an hour or two. Great conversation as always. Thanks for what you say and how you say it, Bob. Signed, Mike. And, you know, that includes all of y'all, because this has been a scintillating conversation so far this evening.
Well, it's good chatting with everybody, and I'm going to go and put on nice clothes and, you know, make myself look.
Thank you for the information. That's very interesting.
Get yourself presentable, huh?
Yeah. Happens once in a while.
I didn't want to interrupt.
No, go.
Questions. I loved Scott's story. I thought that was unbelievably interesting. There's something I've never quite understood, and maybe I'm just being very pedestrian here, but I've never understood the American Nazi Party holding up Hitler. And the reason I've never understood that is because Hitler was very, very specific in his hatred or in his statements that non-Germans were inferior. So I never quite understood.
Okay, so what just happened to the Horn chat group? Let's try this again. All right, who hit the magic button?
Skype is active for me.
I take it as much.
I'm back.
Yeah, I just got kicked off too.
I thought it was something I said.
No, it's me, Skype.
That's
Skype's acting up, has been acting up on me. for some reason.
Sorry, well, I can happily announce that we just dropped below $300. Thank you to Earther. We are now at 200. Wait a minute, damn it! This is where it gets me. We were at 301.50. So that takes us to 3. We're at 298.50. Because somebody just wanted to hear me do math, and then thank you, Little. That takes us down to 248.50.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's progress. Thank you very, very kindly. 248.50 to go.
Hey, Bob, I probably won't know until Monday what your share of, or the show's share of the proceeds of the birthday fairy's visit will be, but as soon as I know, I'll go down the post office and send it in the form of a postal money order and get it to you.
Well, beautiful. Just shoot me an email, and I'll let Boss Man Wayne know, and he'll be tickled not to have not to be met by an echo in the box.
Well, anything that I can do, and it won't always be much, but it'll always.
No, please, that's much appreciated, and I'm glad you spoke up because remember that. You speak for all of San Diego, Scott. You realize this, of course.
Oh, God, that's an awesome responsibility thought.
Well, I mean, okay, you and Punky. Punky speaks for all of San Diego. You translate.
Yeah, well, maybe.
So we had the story about the Navy SEAL accused of a heinous murder in Santa Monica. Well, I got you another one, Scott.
Oh, God. The neighborhood is just going downhill.
This time it's, and if Mark is listening, this will be this will grieve him, and Gunny Bob up in North Dakota and other members of the Corps. So, in the immediate aftermath of Orlando, well, first of all, the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force is based at Camp Pendleton, and Camp Pendleton is San Diego, right?
Yeah, just north. It's in San Diego County.
Right. I only remember it because that's where Gomer Pyle was based.
Yeah, geez.
Well, Gomer has left the building. According to the Marine Corps Times, there is an active investigation going on right now of a pair of active duty Marines. One being a corporal who had a photograph taken of himself in his what do you BDUs, his fatigues, he's got his cap on, and you can see his rank insignia on his collar, and he looks all squared away, and he's holding his service weapon, which appears to be a fully automatic rifle with a scope, and you can see the magazine underneath it. And he's holding it, pointed toward the camera. Now, granted, the barrel is not pointed directly at the camera because that would probably violate some kind of Marine Corps regulation that might get him, court-martialed or something. So it's not. So the rifle barrel is the muzzle is not pointed directly at the camera, but he's got this sort of determined look on his face, like he's kind of biting his lower lip, like he's thinking. And it is captioned with the following words: "Coming to a gay bar near you! ! This was posted on a closed Facebook group for male Marines. And so the investigation is regarding the guy in the picture and the guy who took the picture and posted it to Facebook. First Lieutenant Thomas Gray, who is a spokesman for 1MEF, said, "We take this investigation very seriously," and then said nothing more.
Well, I saw that on one of the local news channels last night, and one of our intrepid reporters talked to somebody connected with the Post, as I recall, the Facebook Post, who told the reporter that his superiors told him not to say anything to the press.
Well, this is that's a little bit depressing, because it means we've still got a long way to go for full integration of the military forces. And how can it not be frightening?
Well, it's that same kind of mindset. I mean, you spoke the other day of the Craigslist post here in San Diego with the verbiage, "You're next," referring to San Diego.
Yeah, with the reference to the decent gay people, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, here's another weird one, because that same evening we had the story coming out of Atlanta of a tweet that said it referred to a couple of well-known gay night spots in Atlanta, which has one of the largest gay populations in the United States, by the way. Outside of New York and San Francisco, I think it is the third largest gay population in the U.S. But it named these two bars, and it said, "Could be the next Orlando. You think I'm the type to be the next shooter? Keep hating me then." Well, okay, this one's weird, because it turns out that the person whose tweet it was sent out under is not the person who tweeted it. Authorities went and investigated. I guess Atlanta Police Department Major Paul Guarucci said, "We have reason to believe that another individual assumed his identity, created that, and posted it." Major Guarucci said the guy who did it, or the guy who was alleged to have done it, got doxxed by somebody else as part of a personal dispute. He continued, "We've been in contact with an individual that we feel made the post. It's still an ongoing investigation." So it's bad enough that the threats are being made. Now the threats... It's like bomb... Does anybody remember the pre 9/11 world of bomb threats? When smart-ass kids would call in bomb threats to get a free day out of high school?
Yeah, it goes way back.
Yeah, well, I guess this is the modern iteration of that. You know, maybe... Why am I echoing? But
not here.
But, you know, maybe, you know, you said something I didn't like, so therefore I'm going to dox you. And, I mean, this stuff can ruin a life.
Yeah, and it's not as if people are not already on edge, okay, after the events of Orlando.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
Hey, you know, the other night when you were talking about Geraldo, which is kind of tied into Orlando and similar topics, I didn't think of it then, Monday night or whenever it was, but I did think about it earlier today when you were talking about what he had said. There is videotape, probably on YouTube, taking you back to the 80s when Geraldo had a daytime talk show. So if he's talking about fighting back, let's recount the episode when he had a group of people invited on the show, and one of them said something bad to another of them, and everybody took up chairs on the stage and started belting one another with chairs, and Geraldo ended up with a broken nose.
Under a desk or something, right? I mean,
yeah.
Didn't he run?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean... there's the element of surprise. There's the element of something breaking bad suddenly, taking everybody unawares. And there's the element of the natural inclination for the first 30 seconds is to be confused as to what's going on. So let's cut the people in the Orlando bar a little slack. I mean, there was supposedly an off-duty cop working security who was armed, presumably, with his or her standard-issued side piece. Maybe they didn't have a shot. I don't think the shooter was wearing any type of armor. I think he tried to buy it, but somebody refused to sell it to him. So he wasn't wearing body armor. But maybe she wasn't in a position to take him out. And maybe people were stunned that they didn't even have presence of mind to grab a bar stool and whack the guy from behind. You know, you've got to cut some people slack and put yourself in their position. And if Geraldo's TV show of the 80s, when the chair fight broke out, is any indication, he's all hat and no cattle. He's talking out of his ass.
I think that almost goes without saying, had you not said it so well.
Why, thank you. That's why I am the official spokesperson, with Punky as my able assistant, as the official spokesbird of the San Diego Greater San Diego Council of Regions.
Exactly. You've got it.
Or something, yeah.
Or something. It's the or something part that matters. Hey, Billable Rick.
Hey.
I got a question for you.
Well, I'll try to answer it. Just so you know, we have a power shutdown at like 5:30 that I'm trying to meet. But what's the question, Bob?
Oh, damn. Do you know anything about bankruptcy?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I know just enough to be dangerous.
Well, what do you do, or is there anything you can do when you've been screwed in a bankruptcy settlement?
I don't think so.
That's what I was afraid of.
It's a settlement, res judicata. Unless there was fraud or deceit involved in terms of, you know, unless that induced you to, you know, unless...
Well, no,
you know,
we just weren't included. And by we, I mean people who live around mountaintop removal sites who have been, you know, poisoned by alpha natural resources, that kind of thing. Just weren't included.
They weren't included in the bankruptcy or what?
Well, right, because Alpha went into bankruptcy in August.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been structuring their, they've been, you know, restructuring. They've sold all their profitable mines off to, in the form, I guess in the form of bonds or something. I don't know how it works. To a bunch of hedge funds.
Okay.
Who are all represented by Citicorp.
Oh, God.
And they've reached a settlement agreement with the state of West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection.
Okay.
Now, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection has a history of giving sweetheart settlements to first Massey and then Alpha, or anybody else who wanted to poison southern West Virginia. For instance, once upon a time, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection allowed Massey to pay off a humongous fine in rocks.
I heard that. I remember that story.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now the WVDEP is going to let Massey, Alpha, rather, walk away from about $1 billion in reclamation costs exchange for $300 million in reclamation costs, which it says it can make by blowing up more mountains.
Wow.
And I've been reading all these stories about this settlement, Rick, and I can't find anywhere where anybody is saying that there was a lawyer for any, I mean, for anybody who was a human being to stand up and say what the the West Virginia Department
standing,
of,
does a you know does a resident of the area even have standing to object because there's
well, what
no
if the,
con-
but what if the,
no
what,
contract with the
but what
with,
if the but what if the residents what if the residents are already parties to previous consent decrees entered by the court?
Well, what court entered them? The bankruptcy court? Or
no, the United States District Court for the Southern District of West Virginia.
Well, I would suggest that you go to someone like, you should send Mike Papantonio's information about this. That's something he might be able to help you on.
I mean, this is the damnedest thing. This is the damnedest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Bankruptcy is one of the strangest venues that you'd ever want to be in. And that's why I don't like to go there, because it's just, you know, it's just so arcane. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's arcane, and it's designed as a vertical playing field. You know, the epitome of not being level.
Yeah, exactly.
In court check this out. In court filings and arguments, regulators expressed concern that the coal mining cooperation that emerges from bankruptcy won't have the financial strength to clean up the land and water. According to court papers, nearly $293 million in reclamation obligations will be associated with the mines that Alpha keeps, while another $181.1 million in reclamation obligations would follow the mines that the creditors take.
Hmm.
The agreement with West Virginia calls for surety bonds Alpha posted to obtain its mining permits to remain in place. Additionally, Alpha will post an additional $100 million in penal bonds and $39 million in letters of credit or cash bonds, according to the West Virginia DEP.
Wow.
And the company and its secured creditors have committed to fund approximately $209 million worth of reclamation and water treatment work over the next 5 to 10 years, including a guaranteed share of excess operating cash flow. But that's without noting what goes begging. And see, there are those consent decrees include monetary agreements for things like remediation of selenium discharges into streams that are measured in the millions of dollars. But I can't find anywhere that says that those things have been reaffirmed by the court.
That's totally bizarre. You know, I wish I could be of more help to you here, Bob.
Well, I mean, I'm not asking you for advice, but I mean, ordinary citizens just don't have any standing, do they?
Well, unless you have a contract, or unless you're a party, unless you have a contract, unless you've got a tort claim against the company that was filed, let's say, pre-bankruptcy, no, pretty much not.
Okay, let me. This is just another general question, then.
Okay.
Let's say you're a law office, and let's say that you represented a bunch of organizations who they provided you the standing whereby you could challenge pollution based on various segments of the Clean Water Act.
Okay.
And let's say that the nature of such challenges carries with it attorney's fees.
Right. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
And none of these cases ever go to trial because, you know, you've got the data and they're dead to rights. So they settle and they enter into consent decrees.
Right.
Well, let's say in the consent decree, the attorney's fees are paid up front, whereas everything else is just down the road.
These are statutory attorney's fees?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about attorney's fees to represent? Okay, to
these get are statutory. These are statutory attorney's fees.
I don't know how those would be paid up front.
Well, I mean they're paid on the settlement.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay.
I mean, it's not like you get a check every month.
Right. That's true. It's lump sum. Sure. Uh huh.
So once the law firm has the settlement monies, they've got theirs. F you.
Right, Igum Foos, yes, exactly.
So they lose nothing if the bankruptcy court erases the terms of the consent decree.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
Now, I do not know this to be a fact, but I have learned to be deeply suspicious.
Hmm. Well, you just have to sometimes wonder about the bankruptcy judge, too, because sometimes they're like, you know, sort of got, you know, things going on with the counsel in front of them that appear all the time. And, you know, they tend to prefer certain, let's say, counsel over others. You know, it can be kind of an inside game to some extent sometimes, you know.
Yeah, we know what sort of nightmares happen in bankruptcy court.
Yeah, right.
What happens to a corporation if it goes bank? I mean, so we've got all these agreements in place.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if they go belly up again? Can they just go through Chapter 11, Chapter 11, Chapter 11 forever?
I don't see why not. Well, wait a second. If there's no reasonable prospect of reorganizing, they can't do a Chapter 11. The only kind of Chapter 11 they could do would be a liquidating Chapter 11, which is basically equivalent to a Chapter 7 liquidation, except with the formal plan. Okay?
Yeah.
If they don't have any assets, you know, I don't know how they can keep doing bankruptcies.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking down the road, because we know what mountaintop removal does to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we have never to this point gotten to the part where we had enough of a, because, you know, people ask me these questions, Rick. They say things like, well, Bob, why hasn't there been a class action suit for all this physical harm?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, because you can't get there with it yet. You
right.
know, you're gonna have to have empirical proof that dust A caused death B.
Yeah, geez.
But you know,
it's 20 years
down the road, when that evidence finally does show up,
mm-hmm.
who the f*** do you sue? God?
A ghost. A ghost. Maybe you do. I mean, I know God has been sued more than once, Bob.
Yeah, but he's never written a check.
Sure, if they had any collection.
Yeah, he's never written a check, and you can't put a lien on the pearly gates.
No. You can't.
I mean, do you begin to get a sense for what a screwing this place takes? Because, see, a bankruptcy like this, they wouldn't... Something makes me think that if this was a mountain that had been blown up next to Vail in Colorado, they wouldn't get away with this.
You know, I think you're right, Bob, for some reason.
You know, if this was a mountain blown up next to, say, Mill Valley, California, they would not get away with this.
No way. Are you kidding me? No fucking way. No. Uh-uh.
You know, if there was toxic waste poisoning in the goddamn Hamptons, there would be really mean lawyers standing in there speaking up for the poisoned rich.
No kidding. Yeah. Yeah.
But see, there's no money's being set aside. It's being set aside for reclamation. It's not being set aside for people who were poisoned.
Hmm. Jeez. And because this whole AIC Act has been delayed, you don't have the empirical data with which to, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm damaged. We can't let this coal company get away with this. You know, they can't get off scot-free. You got to set some money aside to pay for our health care. I mean, just like the 9/11 responders, you know how hard it was to get funding for them?
Oh, yeah.
It took like 5 or 10 years before Congress, you know, appropriated any money for that.
And John Stewart finally got on board, and bang, it happened.
Yeah, well, maybe you need to get John Stewart on board with a mountaintop removal issue. Although he doesn't have a show anymore. I guess John Oliver would be the guy to go to now, or Colbert, you know?
Yeah.
Although he's on, you know, he's got a regular show now, so I don't know that he could get that.
No,
political.
Colbert could never do it. John Oliver could.
Yeah.
Stewart's still doing a lot of, still doing a lot of activist work, though.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, he is, actually. He did something recently. Oh, I think he really wailed on Donald Trump recently.
Well, you know what? I have never given up on the idea of what we talked about a while back, you know, the Great Eight Campaign, Bob Kincaid Tour of the West Coast.
I know.
I still think that would work, but it would be very, very difficult to carry the program, you know, for a month and a half, 2 months, all the, you know, start in San Diego and wind up in Vancouver.
Well, what you'd have to do, Bob, is you'd have to do shows on the road. Do you have that capability?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, all you need is an internet connection, basically, right?
Well, yeah, a decent internet connection. Have you ever tried the free wireless in a Super 8 motel?
Oh God, no.
Yeah, don't do that. There will be no programs from a Super 8.
Is it more or less sketchy than the flooring at the Super 8 or the?
No, that was at the Meth. Motel? That was at the Methtel 6.
Oh, the yeah, okay.
Oh, jeez, Methtel. Oh, God.
Well, here's something that's not.
Are you
too
sure it wasn't? Let me ask you this. I got to get this in. Are you sure it wasn't the Notel Motel, Bob?
I'm absolutely sure.
Okay.
Yeah, because I could hear the cooking going on in the bathtub upstairs.
Oh, my God.
Was there a big neon sign out front that was half burned out and said minutely rates?
No, all I know is they'll leave the lights on for you, but they won't let you have a damn hair dryer unless you ask for it, because the meth heads steal the hair dryers to try to get the copper.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you know how even if you check into like a relatively cheap hotel, there's a hair dryer bolted to the wall.
Yeah, they steal those.
Yeah, no, not at the Methtel 6 in Kanawha City, West Virginia.
Oh my God!
When I checked out the next morning, I said, you know, I was kind of surprised there was no hair dryer. Oh, dude, we've got them here, but like you have to borrow them.
Oh, geez.
I said, what? Because they get stolen? Yep, for the copper.
Here's something not very encouraging, but it. As you were asking the question and describing the situation, two phrases came immediately into my head. One from the 80s when I dabbled in securities and had training to get licensed to do that back in the 80s. One more recently in 2012. The first phrase that popped up into my head was subordinated claims. And the other phrase that popped up in my head was Mitt Romney confidently intoning, corporations are people, my friend.
You mean, let me see here. You mean this?
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Yes! Human beings, my friend.
There you go. And I think
that never gets old. I love listening to that.
As I recall, I think subordinated claims had to do with settlements of bonds if something goes belly up, but it's been so damn long ago I don't really remember.
Right, but the thing is, in what I was getting Billable Rick to confirm what I deeply suspected, that poisoned people have no standing.
Well, yeah, basically you're in a long line for a box office that doesn't exist. And even if
you know who's at the front of that line? The hedge funds who bought the profitable mines.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. They're always at the front of the line, Bob.
Hence the expression subordinated claims. You get to stand in line, and by the time it gets to be your turn, there's nothing left.
Your claim attaches to air, basically. You're highly unsecured creditor, let's just say.
Precisely. And yeah. Just a reminder, at 22 minutes before the hour, we're in sort of a desperate sprint to finish the week okay. Not finishing the week ahead or anything like that, but finishing the week okay. We've got $248.50 to go. $248.50.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
Do you have pick three lottery in your state?
You mean a daily three? Yeah.
I have a friend who's a psychic. And he gave me two numbers earlier today. Let me get onto Facebook.
Oh, it's too late for it's too late.
Well, okay, I think it's still time to do it here. Maybe I'll run down to the corner store. One is 132, and the other is 419. And if anybody wins on either of those pick three numbers, go ahead and kick in a few bucks to the horn. He apparently makes his living on nothing but pick threes. He's got a technique that he uses.
Sounds like he's got a computer that knows the kernel they're drawing it from.
No, this guy, it would take too long to describe what he does, and I don't fully understand it. But it has to do with remote viewing, and it has to do with access to non-historical data. Basically, it's remote viewing of tomorrow's paper to get today's pick three results is what it amounts to.
Wow. Wow.
And he doesn't work. He lives quite well on the basis of constantly winning these pick three jackpots. For whatever it's worth, it could be all horseshit, but.
Oh, and just a reminder, courtesy of Jay Cruzen, the Pappy Challenge continues. If anybody is wandering by their local liquor store, you know, this is kind of a needle in a haystack kind of thing. But here's how it works. Jay Cruzen is in search of a bottle of bourbon, very rare, called Pappy Van Winkle. And Pappy Van Winkle retails, when you can find it, and it's the real deal, for about $250. If you're international, it'll probably be more than that based on taxation. Jay Cruzen is willing to pay you for that. If you find it, then that's $250 for like the 20-year-old. 20-year-old liquor. If you find it, though, he'll also contribute $500 to the horn. It really is a scavenger hunt. It is a very, 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 very rare possibility. I mean, it's like lottery odds. But it could happen. So, you know, if you wander by your local bottle shop, just, hey, you got any Pappy Van Winkle? And he says, yeah, I got a bottle of 20-year-old right here. Jay Cruzen will cover the cost and pay a $500, or not pay, but contribute a $500 bounty to the horn, which would be very, very helpful. There's that, and a couple of people are already looking. We know it ain't going to be found in Canada, and we know the odds of finding it in the United States. So I don't know. Maybe one of the members of the International Horn family might find it. Maybe there's a dusty bottle sitting around somewhere in the outback of Australia, or maybe it ain't going to be in Japan. They have a love of bourbon. But you get the idea. Pappy Van Winkle, 20-year-old, or the 23-year-old, either way. But the retail is around $250. So I thought I would remind you of that because Jay Cruzen reminded me to remind you. So there's that.
Bob, I've got a question.
Yes, go ahead, Charlie. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. How can corporations be people if there's a corporate veil?
Two entirely separate animals. The personhood status applies to whether or not civil rights apply to the corporation. The corporate veil is a legal fiction, or a legal analogy or allegory, relating to how one goes about litigating against it.
So we have people if corporations are people, then there's people that you can not have litigation with. Is that what Romney is saying?
Screw Romney. That's what the Supreme Court's saying.
But wasn't that Supreme Court decision on the basis of a footnote? Wasn't that a railroad case that decision hinged on? And the operative verbiage was in a footnote. It wasn't even... I heard Tom Hartman talk about it once.
A clerk's note, a clerk's headnote, a headnote of the case, and a headnote is supposedly a proposition that the case stands for. So
yeah,
the clerk basically made the law, not the justices.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, and that's what it supposedly hinges on.
Yeah, it's like Santa Fe and something, Atkinson Railroad or something like
no,
that.
No, it's somebody County versus Santa Fe Railroad.
Santa Clara County, I think. Yeah, Santa Clara County, I think. Yeah, yeah. Hartman talks about that all the time.
I think he wrote a book about it some years ago, maybe 10 years ago.
I think so. Yeah. Well, what hasn't he written about? That guy's so prolific.
But the thing is, if you've been listening to Dr. Bill, you know that the background on that goes a lot back, goes further back than Santa Clara County versus. Well, you know,
Santa Fe.
It goes back to the Dartmouth College case.
Hmm. Okay. And that's what that's circa what, Bob?
That's John Marshall on the Supreme Court.
Hmm. Okay.
That's circa early 19th century.
Okay.
It's something that was a long time in developing.
Hmm.
Happy news. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very, very much. We are now down to $198.50 to go in the next 15 minutes. $198.50.
That's very, very happy news.
It is. And you know what? I don't have faith in any gods. I don't have any faith in any religious traditions. But, you know, I dare hope that we can not start more and Monday in a $400 or, well, $398.50 hole.
Bob, how about if we try and invoke the goddess of irony? Maybe that would work.
Oh, do not do that. Do not do that. Okay. No, that's like going into community chest and drawing the get out of jail card, not the go to jail card. No, never ask the goddess of irony for anything.
Okay. We don't want to do that. No, we wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, what shall wampy? Is that the idea?
We don't need any wampins. No wampins.
Okay.
Have had enough wompings for the week.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's been a crazy week, I tell you, starting with that shooting. Oh, my God. You know?
And the thing is,
there's live on my show Sunday. I mean, I literally was covering the updates live on my show, that and the incident in California with the dude from Indiana. So... I was doing updates, I mean, literally, as they were coming in. I mean, and it was incredible. And I felt so out of sorts.
Mm. No kidding.
Mm. It was really, really an incredible day. And I was still up when they started coming through. Update, the news didn't really start reporting on it until about 4:30, between 4 and 4:30. I was kind of shocked that they, you know, I didn't start seeing anything about it until that time. Mm. And because I don't sleep, obviously. And they... You know, the updates were kind of slow in coming, and when they started coming in, it was like the total went from 20 to 50 just like instantly.
Yeah.
And it was amazing the way things.
And you know what? It is so infuriating, Jules. So absolutely infuriating, the fact that the no sooner was the information out than the false flag monsters got started. You know. I have a visceral response now to the two words crisis actor.
Ugh. Yes.
Ugh.
You know, to just
piss
on the grieving the way that they do. And there's never, you know, there's never any repercussions for the sons of bitches.
True.
Or almost never.
It's bad enough that the gun nuts and their allies minimize these events when they happen, but to take it the next step or a couple of steps beyond and just paint a picture that's just literally based on non-reality is, Here's why I really wonder why maybe we haven't reached a tipping point of some sort, because people have had it, their gullets are full of this. They've had it up to here, and I'm pointing to my gullet, wherever I think I left it. And we have seen it unfold in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Every couple of weeks, there's some new blood-soaked entry, float, if you will, in the parade of lunacies. And when do you reach the point of saying, we've had enough, it's time for change, and not overreacting?
Well, no. Well, see, that's the problem, Scott. You don't get to say, we don't get to say we've had enough. The NRA owns the Congress. I go back to my thesis of Monday. The NRA is the largest, most well-funded, most powerful terrorist organization on Earth.
They're more powerful than Hezbollah or the Islamic Jihad or ISIS or any of those crazy groups, you know?
You're damn right. And they have the power to keep us from saying we've had enough.
Mm.
You know, as we discussed, their own membership thinks it would be okay to close the gun show loophole. Their own membership thinks that we need to be more serious about making sure that firearms don't wind up in the hands of people who are, not home, so to speak.
So even if there are more of us than there are of them, the distinction is we outnumber them, but our pockets aren't deep enough and our influence isn't broad enough. Mm-hmm. Is that basically it?
Yeah, you're right about there.
I think Punky affirmed what you just said, Scott.
Oh, Punky's mad.
Yeah.
Well,
Punky is excited at the idea that there might be a Bob Kincaid Horn West Coast tour.
Oh,
there you go.
Punky will co-host if there is and we work in San Diego.
Don't let him run the board because he'll drop a bird seed into the slider pots.
Well, maybe by then we'll be working virtually and it'll all be on an iPad or something.
Oh, geez, that's funny.
No, that exists. Those things exist. Yeah. I've been looking at them. They're really fucking cool.
Something else I think that we're missing here, it's not just the NRA, but the gun manufacturers. And the gun manufacturers, you know, you bring the Daesh and Hezbollah and whatnot. They're getting weapons from someplace, and, we're selling them to Saudi Arabia and whatnot, and they're getting filtered through to the terrorist organizations. Our weapons are eventually getting filtered through because they're getting left in these cities, and they're picking them up, and they're taking them with them.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and again, we come back to where we left off last night. I'm exceedingly creeped out by this memo that was that came out from dissidents in the State Department, saying that they want to get their bombing on against the Assad regime in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
War is big business. I mean, even in the former Soviet Union, the Russians are still selling the Chechens weapons. Because, you know, it's good business. It keeps the economy going for them to have a continual fight between Russia and the Chechens.
Yeah, it's not just big business. It's good business. And I've got a quick update. This is inspiring. Thank you very kindly to Charlene and Alma. We are down to only $128.50 to go in 7 minutes. So that is huge. Huge, huge, huge. Thank you. I hate doing it. I hate doing this like a damn telethon. I'm sorry. I always feel just, never mind. But it's what we got to do to keep this thing going.
You could always sell your soul and have corporate slime come in.
Oh, well, no. I held a black mass and it involved pentacles. And he showed up and looked at me. Really? You? I've already got it.
So. Some years ago, I was issued a certificate entitling me to 1/666 fraction of Pope Benedict's soul. Do you think we could auction that off for anything?
Is it a fancy lace document or something?
Yeah, it's official, it's numbered, and I think I paid $5 for it or something. It's suitable for framing, too.
You just blew it when you said I paid $5 for it.
Well, it was a contribution to a to defray printing costs, I think. All I know is the item got banned on eBay, but I was lucky enough to find a way to get one. And
it's aged, and it was banned, so that means that it's, you know, it's a sacred item now. It's a hard-to-find item.
No, it's nothing. A curiosity, and it's only one of 666 certificates issued.
Yeah, so
certainly a limited supply item.
Limited edition item. There you go. Someone must look that up and find out how rare that is. That might be a collector's item. You never know.
Bob, I'll send you a link. I'll send a link so you can see it, and maybe we can generate some funds for the horn. I'd be willing to part with it, because, hell, he's not even Pope anymore.
Yeah, but, I mean, really, Benny? I mean, how do you know he's not going to have a flashback and want to, you know, annex, you know, your linen closet?
I don't think Bob wants to take possession of it, so.
Okay. there was an old song that I will not refer to, but the title of it can be repurposed here. You can have him, I don't want him, he's too evil for me.
Well, there is that. God, I didn't mean to bring the proceedings to a screeching halt.
To break the silence.
I was just thinking about what I have around here I could sell, but...
Okay.
You're out of the running on this, Sparky.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm. The cowbell.
Yeah, right, see?
We have a birthday boy in the presence, and since we got cut short yesterday because we had a wonderful speech from Mr. Bernie Sanders, I think our birthday boy deserves his birthday song. So here it goes. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Scott. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, bravo, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Jules, the official birthday singer of the horn.
And you don't even have to pay a copyright fee anymore because they lost the rights to the happy birthday deal.
Yes, they did.
Good for them.
All day yesterday, the official day, Punky wanted to know when the scantily clad lady was going to jump out of the cake. So,
I couldn't make it yesterday. So,
you've gotten your bird trained very well there, Scott.
You can blame Bernie Sanders.
There you go. Blame Bernie. That's right. That's right. It's all his fault. Okay.
It's time.
It is time. Let's roll on out of here. We will do so, hoping the best for Moran Monday as it approaches. And thanks, everybody, for a wonderful, wonderful Friday on the Front Porch discussion that went all over the place and had a tremendous amount of content and interchange and et cetera. I love, I love these Friday conversations, and it's hard to express exactly how much. But thank you, one and all. Being as how it's right at 9 o'clock, I'll shut down here with those thanks. Wish you all a happy weekend, and well, go fire up Malloy. Catch you Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye, y'all.